Good evening, good morning, whatever
good
it is.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Hoops HD, our July session podcast, but it's August, David.
It is. Well, do you remember when the Kyle Lamb show, when Kyle Lamb did his Thanksgiving special a week after Thanksgiving? Do you remember that?
I remember that. That was a lot of fun. Kyle had a great time on that show.
Yeah, Kyle wasn't on that show, but it was one of the best shows ever.
So, Dave, what's going on here? Why is it July?
Well, we got a great show for you tonight, don't we? Chad, what do we got on tap tonight?
Well, let me start by introducing our July 33rd panel here. Off to my side, there's David Griggs. Below me, we got Joey Fortson. Off on the other corner there, John Titel. I'm Chad Sherwood.
Now that you've introduced the panel, Chad, what else do we have?
I have no idea, David.
Jam-packed with stuff tonight.
We're going to start with all the exciting action that's been going on in college basketball. We have a special report on it if you just want to listen.
All right. And I think that's a wrap.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. All right. David, tell us. We do have some stuff that's been going on. Maybe not so much in the college basketball world, some stuff in the college football realm. There is this big tournament that's going on. David, can you tell us a little about the tournament? Why don't we start with that? What is this tournament?
Yeah, well, it's just called the basketball tournament, and I believe this is the fourth or fifth edition of it. And it is in its, a chiseled down effect. I want to say it's either 68 or 72 teams. It's a $2 million jackpot, winner take all, that goes to the winning team. I don't even know how many players are on each team. I want to say it's 7 or 8, but I'm not entirely sure. But it is – I read somewhere that there were 300 teams that entered it, and you know, it played its way down to the 72 before teams had to qualify. And it's no current professional players, or at least no current NBA players, but there is a lot of high caliber talent, a lot of really good former college players, some really good former NBA players. A lot of teams, albeit not all of them, but a lot of them are connected to schools. Ram Nation is former VCU players. Boeheim's Army is former Syracuse players. There's a team of former Cincinnati players. There's a team of former Ohio State players. I believe all these teams have been eliminated. There's a team called Fredette. There's a team that Jimmer Fredette named after himself. You've got to love the modesty there. It's just like he had his name in the thing. But it is kind of a unique event. It's a dead period. It's kind of at the halftime of between the end of college basketball and the beginning of college basketball. It's the closest thing that we have to sort of a basketball open cup, like some of these soccer open cups. And Joby, kind of a soccer guy, two things to look at this, and we're not going to harp on it for very long because we've just got so much to get to. But what do you think of the idea of having like an open cup for basketball in the summer that maybe the college teams could participate in, and how would that affect the college game if we had it? And the other thing is the unique way that they end the games, which is it's Elam's ending with 4 minutes to go in the game. They basically they take the leading team's point total, add 7 to it, and then turn the clock off and play to that. So if it's 80 to 70, then the first team, the 87, would win the game. So,
I've watched a couple of games. I mean, hey, it's basketball. It's great in that regard. It was fun seeing, to be honest, the Ohio State team play together. And, you know, it's kind of – that Sullinger was, you know, overweight but still good, you know. I think in terms of an open cup, it's not like the open cup because – in soccer, because that is a
true.
It's actually in soccer, it goes concurrently with the season, and
right.
It actually shows the depth of teams. Because if you better have depth, because either that or you're choosing the regular season or the tournament. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
In this particular case, the idea of it, hey, it's basketball. I would welcome it. The problem is obviously injuries, and then also. I think I'd be open on the compensation deal. Yeah, you know, in terms of, you know, the amount of money you win, you know, kind of how this is structured where, you know, a $2 million prize at the end and that sort of thing. I know we talk about amateurism and all that, and I'm not for paying players, but if a generic sponsor is, you know, my worry is they could turn to a payoff situation, you know, but yeah, we're with the boosters, but that's not the case here. I actually think it's kind of neat, and let's see if some college kids win some money using their talents. I'd be all for it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been very annoyed at in recent years, especially, is the way that the college games end with all the fouling. And David, I honestly have not been watching much of these games. You mentioned this Elam ending idea of, hey, play until the next first team that reaches 7 points more than the current leading team, and that team immediately wins the game. And well, Tytel, what do you think about something like that as a alternative to the way that we end games?
Hate it. If they're just doing it because this is an experimental exhibition thing and they want to try something new, have at it. But I'm not going to tune in to watch Elam's ending or Sherwood's ending or anybody else's ending, because the basketball I like is played with the normal rules, where if a team happens to be down 10 with 4 minutes left, it's not a race to 87. It's a race to beat the other team.
I agree with that. I don't like the foul parade. I'm with you on that, Chad. The only circumstance would be maybe if it were 30 points and it's just utterly ridiculous to even be fouling. Maybe that's a game that needs to be put out of its misery. But all in all, I like that the clock is part of the game. Another thing that this tournament does that I hate is that they have quarters. It's kind of fun to watch in a jamboree type event, which this tournament is. But I would not be at all in favor of college basketball going to this. The way to clean up the foul parade, in my opinion, is to call every foul where there is no intent to play defense what used to be an intentional foul and what is now a flagrant foul. Because if your intent is to foul, then it's an intentional foul. If you're playing in defense and you inadvertently foul, then it's a foul. I think if you just start giving teams two shots on the ball, you're going to see a drastic decline in fouling at the end of the game.
Is that the solution, Tytel? Is, you know, I mean, when you hear the coach yelling, foul, 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 he hacks a guy, shouldn't it be two shots in the ball?
Yes, in my opinion. Oh, you asked Tytel, I'm sorry.
Sure, but the key to winning the TBT is not to foul or convert free throws. It's to get Kyle Fogg on your team. Former Arizona Wildcat, played 130 games in Tucson and did nothing for us at all. He didn't even average 10 a game for his career. Somehow he leaves Tucson and becomes a superstar. Goes to Finland, leads the league in scoring. Goes to Germany, leads the league in scoring. Goes to the Euro Cup as the champs with Unica Malaga last year in the Spanish league. He comes to the TBT. He's won it 3 years in a row by 5 points or less in the title game, two-time defending MVP. I don't care if Fredette wins over Eberline Drive tonight or not. Kyle Fogg is winning this tournament, and Kyle Fogg is your MVP.
All right, welcome to Kyle Fogg then. A couple of things that have been going on is, from what I understand, last season we had these charity exhibitions where we had preseason exhibition games where two D1 teams were allowed to play each other. We may be looking at some of that this season. Regular season schedules are being released now, exhibition schedules. Probably still a couple months away from getting them.
Yeah, I think we saw the 112th came out today. So what's 303 minus 353 minus 112? Anybody? I don't know what it is. What is that?
I was told there would be no math.
Okay. Well, whatever something that is, that's how many we have.
Yeah, it's something 200. Well, Joe, but do you like these exhibitions? Do you think that they should be back again this year and every year going forward? I can't hear you,
Joby. You've muted yourself.
Okay, Joby.
We normally appreciate it. We normally don't like hearing from Joby, but in this case,
you don't have to get my back feed. No, I love it because it's basketball. Much like the previous question, it's basketball. It's great. And players, you know, I like the fact, and I think it's silly that we have to play this whole. It's great that it goes to charity, but I have a feeling there's not a lot of net money. It's going to the charities. So, you know, it's kind of like how, you know, you hear stories about how the Red Cross raises all this money and actually only 5% of it goes to the victims, or name your charity. I have a feeling that's what's happening to a degree here. But, hey, if it gets kids out on the court in a true, instead of playing athletes in action, you're playing like last year last year, for instance, Virginia and Villanova played. What a great game. What a great prep for both teams. And yeah, one is the number one seed going to the tournament, and the other is the national. One's number one in the regular season, the other's number one overall.
UMBC. Anyhow.
Yeah. I'm a fan of these. Yeah, I'm a fan of these. Now, the thing is, they were granted by waiver. They're still not technically allowed in the legislation. But if a school, or I guess in this case two schools, want to do one, they have to petition the NCAA. I think somewhere around 80% of them got granted. Not all of them did. It has to go to a legitimate charity. There can't be any money made by the schools off of television, gate, or anything. It all has to go to charity. And but my thing is like, why they have basically, the whispers are, and that they would approve these waivers again if schools wanted to do it. I hope a lot of schools wanted to do it. Kansas, actually, Bill Self at Kansas got the whole ball rolling when he got the waiver for the Kansas-Missouri game. It was, I thought, a fantastic event. It raised several million dollars. It was, albeit a game for charity, that meant absolutely nothing. But if you watched it online, I know you did, Chad, it was very, very intense. Even though the game meant absolutely nothing. But we saw Texas and Texas A&M play. Mm-hmm. We saw several other games. It kind of renewed some rivalries and gave us some matchups that you always want to see but never do. As much as I'd like to see them during the regular season, at least we get them at some point. And what's wrong? There is no downside here. So my thing is, why doesn't the NCAA allow for a third exhibition game against a Division I team if the money goes to charity? Why even make anybody go through the waiver process? Yeah. Fair enough.
I think it did come down to the charity. I mean, we talk about the millions that were made in a game like Missouri and Kansas. There were a lot of smaller games out there where you know $5,000 ended up being the donation. So. Which is fine. I mean, still money to charity. I've got no problem with that. But I understand also that they don't want to see a game being raised for the charity being, to help the Adidas defense fund against the.
Well, I am opening up again the David Griggs Foundation. That's a charity that will be accepting donations.
Let's see, what else do we want to cover here tonight? We have two new teams that are now that we're past July 1st, are official members of Division I. We want to welcome North Alabama and Cal Baptist in. We have 353 teams, David, as you mentioned earlier, although going back down to 352 next year, from what I understand.
Not happy about that. We have got to save the Tigers. We'll certainly talk a lot about that, if not today, maybe today, but at a later date. But Savannah State, their entire school and certainly their entire athletic department is being absolutely screwed into moving down. They don't want to, and they shouldn't have to. And they were very competitive, at least in men's basketball last year. They were in contention for first place, and hopefully they will be again this year. What a story that would be.
Well, I mean, Tytel, we've seen this. Several teams come up recently. It's actually been 4 years since we've had a new team added into D1, but the last group of teams included teams like the Grand Canyon Lopes, teams that have made a little bit of noise here. Do you think that the new NCAA rules that came into effect here, maybe I think it was 7 or 8 years ago at this point, that said, hey, you've got to have a conference before you can come up. We're not just going to let a team like Morris Brown say, hey, we're Division I, and a week later have no money left and the entire university shuts down. Is that are things working the right way now with these transitions?
I love Morris Brown. He was a great player back in the day. No, I think that it is important that you join a conference. As far as I can tell, I think North Alabama, a.k.a. the Lions, will be joining the Atlantic Sun. And the Cal Baptist Lancers will be joining the WAC. So it's nice to see them joining established conferences. I assume they're going to struggle at first, but then they'll build their way up with coaching and recruiting and transfers and all the way that teams succeed in the 21st century. I'm a little worried about the product getting diluted in terms of we already got 350-some-odd teams. I don't know that we need a couple more. That being said, if they're entertaining and if they enhance the product, then I'm all for it. But if it's just a money grab, which I assume everything is the NCAA these days, and I don't know if I love it, but let's let them play and see what happens.
Yeah, some teams have done better than others. And, you know, Northern Kentucky, who really struggled their first year or two of transition. An NCAA tournament 2 years ago in a was it first or second place finish in the Horizon League last year. They've been really successful. Gulf Coast again came up not – I mean, they weren't fresh off the cycle, but they came up very recently. They've been really successful. The only teams that it hasn't really worked out for at all are were Winston-Salem State, who ended up going back down, and Morris Brown. So one of the things the new rules did, I think, was it forced a full commitment. Like you had to have certain resources in place, and you had to have a conference affiliation before moving up. I think was it NGIT was the last team that came up as an independent. It was that right?
They struggled incredibly bad for years
Yeah. But I don't know. In looking at the Lopes, and I know that was – Grand Canyon was sort of an exception to the rule. Is a four-year transition too long? Because you look at Cal Baptist in North Alabama too. They're going to be Div 1 ready before 4 years, or they could be. And if anything, I think that long of – I understand why it's 4 years, but I think it actually has an adverse effect. I think that they would get caught up more quickly if it was just a year or 2 years. I have no evidence to back that up.
I agree 100%. Think about recruits. I mean, simple. The average recruit is 4 years, and so these kids, even before the move, hey, we're going up next year, but you will never get a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. I mean, I don't like that. I think I'm with you. It should be at least two. I think two's fair. Yeah, because you don't want to have a fluke situation. But if you already have to have a conference, thus there's a revenue stream that's not dependent with you doing a bunch of bye games necessarily, though bye games will certainly be part of the plan. If you have that and that component, and you prove yourself more than 1 year, 2 years, I think that should be adequate. And maybe in time, if the systems get streamlined, et cetera, we even can reduce the overall rule to one. But let's start with two.
Yeah, because
I agree with you. I think 2 years is probably the perfect thing, because wasn't the point of the rule originally to be make sure you are fully committed and fully brought up with your facilities and your program and everything to the D1 level? But when you make those requirements before you start the transition –
right.
Why do we need 4 years for that?
The way it works, there is a review at the end of each year to make sure you're hitting the correct benchmarks. Now, what happens if you don't? I really don't know.
Well, I would say if you don't hit the benchmark, then after your second year, you've got to spend a third transitional year. That's
right,
fine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you extend the transition year until you get through, I agree with Chad. I think the solution's easy. You don't for you for everybody, but if you're Morris Brown and you're struggling along, you don't close the school, but you're struggling along and you clearly aren't there, well then you're sorry, you and the WAC, it would be the WAC, let's be honest here.
Welcoming all comers. That's what the WAC stands for.
Slice of the WAC and all that stuff. Well, you get to wait another year and you gotta prove it. But
in fact I may be wrong,
which I think will hit the ground running.
Joby, I may be wrong here, but I think it was Presbyterian when they transitioned up actually had to spend an extra year in the transitional phase because of they missed some of the benchmarks, which
I don't remember that, but
I don't know if they had to go out an extra year. They tried to get a waiver on the basis that essentially, they did it for their seniors. I don't remember what their mitigating circumstance was, but they wanted to get a waiver in their last year of it to get the fourth year waived, or it could have been the fifth year, but the waiver was denied.
On that note, we have some big breaking news. John Stalica is with us. Welcome, Stalica. Maybe. I see him there.
Yeah.
I see a blank screen.
Oh, we're live on – yeah. Okay. Well, John's not joining the show, but there he is. We have a live look in the John. He's actually not even aware he's on the podcast right now. He's just – we've just snuck a camera into his house. That's funny. Yeah. Oh, right. Well, we are live on tape delay.
if he ever does show up. I guess we have one other topic. Joby, I think you want to hit on this. Let me throw it out to you. Really not a college basketball topic right now. May end up being one in the future, but there's a little situation over at Ohio State in the football realm, and I think you want to have a few comments on it.
Yeah, and it's not – I want to address it not from an Ohio State perspective, from a football perspective, but broader will hit. It's not even a may. I think it's a will hit college basketball.
It already has.
We have a heightened, and I, from a personal standpoint, I am pleased with it. As a former abuse counselor, I now have a passion on this, but the, you know, in the wake of the hashtag Me Too elements and movement, there are going to be instances where less leeway is going to be given to individuals. It could have really helped at Penn State, to be very honest, to use another football example. But we're going to see less leeway in this case. And the real question is, what is the culpability and how much should you know about the people who work for you at the end of the day? There's going to be a lot of guilt by association, but by the same token, we're not going to be sweeping things under the rug. So is it a net good or is it a net bad? Exposing abuse and not letting perpetrators get away with it, move like you saw in the church, move from, you know, parish to parish, now in this case moving from basketball school to basketball school, or football to football, or in my own school, lacrosse, you know, we had a bad instance of this. I think it's going to be a net positive, but I think it will lead to a lot of salacious headlines. I think we should be ready for that. And it's going to be the unknown when it happens in that regard.
Well, I personally think that when you are the boss, you are the head coach, you are the school athletic director, you've got culpability there, and you've got responsibility for the people that you hire and the assistants that you choose and the coaches that you choose in your system. And to just say, oh, well, they isolated it for me to protect me, I don't think that's the way to go. I think that, you know, first of all, I think it's probably nonsense half the time. Well, I didn't know it, only everybody else on the staff knew it. I think that's complete nonsense. But I still think that there has to be responsibility, not just up the chain, to make certain that we are watching what's going on in our own house. So that's kind of my thought on it. Stalika, have you joined us now? Did you have any thoughts on these issues?
Yeah, we had fun before you got here, Stalika. We're on to the
series. I think we still don't have him. David, maybe I'll throw it over to you.
It's kind of hard to say. Like, I agree with what you said about being responsible for what's in your own house, but sometimes I could also see how someone in that situation, a lot of people when confronted with sexual assault or domestic abuse or any kind of abuse, whether they're directly involved or where they're witnessing it, aren't going to handle it the way that it needs to be handled. Either, you know, the 1 hour training session you have at every orientation once a year just isn't enough, or you're just not a professional. So what, like a lot of universities do, not just in athletic departments, is like they have you just report it. Like if you're what's called a responsible employee, meaning you work at the school and you work with students, you're just supposed to report it. What was unique about some of this is that it didn't involve the victim wasn't really tied to the school itself. Like the assistant coach was, but the person he assaulted was his spouse, who had no direct ties. And I could understand like not liking it, but what do I do now? Like, what would the Title IX officer do if I brought this forward, or what would HR do, or what would the athletic director do? And the other thing is, there's the other piece of it. And I think, Joby might be familiar with this too. Like, you cannot it's illegal. It might not just be against policy. It might be flat out illegal to just, for protection of the victims, even if you do report it, one of the responsibilities of the reporter is to keep it confidential. So you can't just go to the media and say, I have fired this coach because he was abusing his wife.
Yeah. And also another component, another layer that gets very complicated in this space is what the accusation is about. Is it about, in the case that's before us and in the news today, is about abuse? It's, it's physical, it's about as bad, for lack of a better word, it's about as bad as you can get. But how does that tie in? Because sometimes we conflate these. How does that tie in with sexual harassment, which is also certainly, especially by someone who commits it, certainly their professional life is on the line, but it's different from having the law. The law enforcement typically will not get involved in sexual harassment. So how these issues percolate, and they will. I mean, this is just a clarion call for what is to come. We're going to be living in a new world, and how universities deal with this, how head coaches, even some of the most revered, such as names as Paterno and Meyer in the football space, but we will hear other well-known basketball coaches. It will happen. Be in a similar position. How will and athletic directors, how will, and presidents, how will this, what is the next hit and how should it be handled? And I think it's well said in that regard of all the concerns that come down.
Yeah, and I think it may even go broader, broader than that in terms of just what we have seen, what we've actually seen in the college basketball world, from not on this topic, but on a lot of the cheating and the like here, that we are seeing a lot more responsibility, a lot more big names losing jobs, and a lot more big names being called out.
Some rightly so. Rick Pitino was in the midst of a sexual scandal. Pitino was. I mean, that's a big name. And who knows if that, it's not a far leap that there's something that some coach somewhere or some big name somewhere or some big time player is, taking advantage at some other location.
Right. But for any type of cheating now, I think that there's a lot more, and I think it's necessary. I think we need it, that there's got to be a lot more. It's got to be a lot. We've got to see it a lot more. We've got to have people be responsible and get these rules enforced and in play here. Sleek, have you joined us officially?
Yes, I think I can safely say I'm on here, but I think my bottom third would not be appropriate given this topic here.
Sleek, you've missed a few of our topics, in fact, but do you have any specific topics you want to bring up here for the evening?
Well, what I was going to bring up, assuming it wasn't brought up earlier, was some of the exempt tournaments that have started to be unveiled in the past couple days. One example would be the Maui Invitational, which is mainly going to be into, two different sets of 14 brackets that will not involve Chaminade this year, because Chaminade is actually going to be part of Maui on the mainland. So on one half of the bracket, you got Duke and San Diego State, along with Auburn and Xavier in one game. The other pod is going to have Gonzaga, Illinois, as well as Arizona and Iowa State.
So let me get straight here, Tytel. Arizona would be the 4 seed in that pod, right?
It could be the 5th seed the way we're going. Who knows?
Bring Chaminade back from the mainland.
Well, the way things would have gone last year, Iowa State would have been, 10th in the Big 12, but possibly 1st in the Pac-12?
Okay. I guess on that note, why don't we run through? I think we've hit all our topics. David, did you have any other topics we needed here?
It looks like we're running out of time.
Okay, we're running out of time. So let me run through each of you for any other thoughts for the evening. Tytel, I haven't heard from you in a little bit. Let me throw that over to you first.
So as Delika mentioned, some of the schedules are coming out for the tournaments. They're also starting to come out for certain teams. If you have not looked at the Oklahoma schedule yet, you should, because it's amazing. So they're doing the Battle for Atlantis, which means they could get Florida, Wisconsin, and like Virginia on three consecutive nights. Good luck with that in November. Then they ease into December with five games against five decent teams in five different cities. They get Notre Dame in New York, Wichita State in Oklahoma City, USC in Tulsa, Creighton in Norman, and Northwestern in Evanston. And then you'd think the SEC Big 12 is their easy game against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is bringing in two McDonald's All-Americans this year. I'm not saying Oklahoma's going to have a losing record, even though they did lose Trae Young, but we're going to see what they're made of in non-conference play. Forget about the Big 12.
They need to step it up.
And the Big 12 is kind of a wimpy conference also.
Is Georgetown's schedule out yet? Have they put together that top 250 schedule that we were hoping to see out of conference?
Well, let me sort of get your first final thoughts on that one then. Joby?
Yeah, the interesting development that could also have impacts long-term. Recently, since the college basketball season ended, the Supreme Court has basically broken down the juggernaut that is Las Vegas on sports game betting. And just recently, I think it was today even, was the first bets on college, or it was yesterday, August 1st, the college first college wagering could actually happen outside the state of Las Vegas in Tunica, Mississippi. Beautiful Tunica. I have actually been there.
Oh, it's a basketball hotbed. I mean, yeah. It's just wall-to-wall. Tunica, Mississippi, we've got the whole town watching this.
Trust me. They're not betting on college basketball. I think that other college sport is getting in SEC country is getting the wagering. But this is just the beginning. I think we're going to see this expand. Does this lead to down the road, for instance, the proliferation? Does it lead to your Tulane and Boston College type scandals getting more prevalent? Or is that overplayed and was always overplayed by the NCAAs? It should be a real interesting thing as we go forward. In the meantime, I'll be driving my 2 hours to Delaware and placing down bets in likely in the near future.
I'll be driving my 5 minutes to Atlantic City and doing the same already. Some of the sports books already up and running in the casinos here. And they're building some beautiful sports books that are, you know, as opposed to just a corner betting window, which is what they opened with in some of these places. But it is an exciting time for if you're into sports gambling and, you know, and with the college game in there. I know in New Jersey, at least the rule is going to be that you cannot wager on any New Jersey teams, no matter where they play, nor can you wager on any event that takes place within the state of New Jersey. I won't be able to. That's the way that the New Jersey law passed, so that's what it is.
Well, I mean, I know no one's going to bet on Rutgers, but my God, that seems a little extreme.
I know. It means there's no betting on Fairleigh Dickinson either, and I'm very upset about that.
Further Joby's point, though, you can wager on in-state teams in Mississippi, though.
Yeah.
At least that's my understanding.
But you can bet on Mississippi State. You can in Mississippi.
Stalika, you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if this has been covered yet, but I also wanted to get into Mike Davis actually leaving Texas Southern and taking the new job at Detroit Mercy, which means the latest reclamation project, wait for it, Johnny Jones now coaching at Texas Southern. Will he come back from the dead?
How do people keep getting – how do some people just keep getting jobs? I don't understand it.
Well, David, let me throw it to you for any final thoughts here, as because I got a little distracted there as Mikal Franco just won the game on a walk-off home run for the Phillies. So I'll throw it over to you.
well, good for them. My only thing is it's just, you know, it's our July show here on July 33rd. We are going to be giving away free chili, so just be checking the website trying to, you know, see if you won or not. How do you I've never won free chili. How does it work, Chad?
You just have to keep clicking on the picture of the chili, and you may actually win some.
Okay. Well, and we're giving some away tonight.
Yes. And
all right.
I guess on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of John Stalika and David Griggs, John Titel, Joby Fortson, I'm Chad Sherwood. We are just 95 days and 21 hours away from the start of the college basketball season. Less than that for our first exhibition games. So keep an eye on the website. We've got a lot more content, including our August podcast, which maybe not in December the way we're going.
The way we're going, hopefully we have actually do it in August.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll talk to you again real soon.